All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us here on the stream today. Henrik here with Red Ice TV, and we have kind of a last-minute really live stream we wanted to do here today. So thank you for joining us on either YouTube or DLive or maybe later at redicemembers.com or redice.tv. It's great to have you all here. We are going to spend some time today talking about the a little bit about the Dayton shooter. We're going to kind of put this in perspective to what happened in regards to the El Paso shooter as well. And not really analyze the events per se, but rather the reaction, which is the interesting thing to do. There's plenty of questions surrounding definitely the El Paso shooter. I've had more time to look into that in terms of like the manifesto and these kinds of things, and a little bit less about the Dayton shooter. However, it took the media about 48 hours, almost 2 days, before they started recognizing just kind of a little bit of the politics of the shooter, because it kind of seemed to go against the narrative that they were trying to push. Many, of course, had jumped immediately on the El Paso shooter and singled out things in the manifesto to claim that this was white supremacy, white nationalism, etc., ignoring like things like the UBI issue that he was talking about, automation, which is like something that Andrew Yang's talking about, or the climate alarmism that someone like AOC talks about, for example. So a lot of questions about why they only picked certain selected pieces from that and to present kind of this image of the bad guy. We know what's going on, obviously. We know who they're trying to blame. But anyway, lots to talk about in terms of the Dayton shooter and also, of course, then the media reactions and who he might have been inspired by, who he followed online, who he retweeted, things like that. This is, of course, always what they've done when it comes to other shooters. They tell us who inspired them, who followed them, etc. And then they use that to kind of create a composite image, really, of who is bad, who we can associate with that, right? So we're going to kind of return that favor a little bit here today and talk about who might have been inspiring him to do this act in Ohio. Not per se whether the event's legitimate or not, but we'll get to that. Anyway, joining us on the line here today, we have Gator, also known as Gamer Gator. He's you might know him primarily from being the co-host of the Kill Stream with Ethan Ralph, of course. So welcome, Gator. Thank you for coming on short notice and doing this with us.
Thank you for having me on, Henrik. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Well, yeah, exactly. And in a way, it's kind of under ironic circumstances, perhaps, and also under circumstances which we need to kind of hammer. I'm actually not one who's personally of the belief that the people that a person follows, or even if they listen to someone, that you can blame the parties that they were the distributors of the information, if you so will. I think you need to blame the actor themselves. They need to take responsibility for what they did. But it needs to be pointed out here right at the outset, Gator, that we've seen so many times with these shooters now, same with the so-called garlic shooter right in California, that they're grasping for details about like supposed white nationalism or white supremacy. Was he right-wing, Trump supporter, etc.? And they use that to kind of create a composite image of who this person was so that they can blame who they want, right?
Right. And not only that, but they also tend to ignore that most of the mass casualty events happen in large cities like Chicago, which are quote unquote diverse. And they try to ignore the races of other people that aren't white when they commit these acts of domestic terrorism. It's just this narrative that they're trying to build on the left, trying to make people think that it's only white people that do this, that it's only right wingers that do this, and nothing can be further from the truth. If you look at Chicago, people die every single day, dozens and dozens of people. This is a serious problem, and it's an issue that the left is deliberately trying to demagogue because they believe they can use it as a wedge issue to try to get rid of the Republican Party and President Trump.
Yeah, blame Trump, call him a white nationalist, and that's kind of really what happened after the El Paso shooter. It was like, it was a done deal kind of thing. Now, there's a lot of questions about that, and I think those are valid, important. And same thing with Dayton. That always needs to be, you know, referenced. We should question these things. We should. It is kind of timely. I've always been personally of the belief, before we dive into some of this material, that it benefits the establishment to ramp things up on both sides, because we know that violent acts is ultimately something which they benefit from, because they can use that as an excuse to say, well, we need to come in here, we need to censor, we need to push certain things under the rug kind of thing, we need to cover up certain things, we need to ban, we need to censor, we need to block and control, and ultimately come in with the security to prevent these situations from happening. So it is kind of interesting that we've had so many shootings. They try to tie it to right-wing, you know, kind of ideologies right away. Then we kind of are gifted, if you will, with a left-wing personality that does a shooter. So we got to be careful, and we got to be honest and talk about the truth wherever it may lead. But I think it's fair to kind of fling some of this back at them that this guy followed. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. See, the thing is that the left and the media are trying to, they push accelerationism, right? And this is what one of the beliefs that the Dayton shooter really emphasized. He believed that this coming class struggle, this coming race struggle was going to happen, and he wanted to push the United States into that that armed conflict. What we see is that they're trying to push the left and the right to radicalize as much as humanly possible because they want this conflict, number one. But number two, the media excuses left-wing radicals and tries to kind of bury the lead on these stories so that they can go after right-wingers and say, look, right-wingers are evil, right-wingers are domestic terrorists, we need to ban guns, we need to lock all these people up. I mean, President Trump out there the other day was parroting left-wing talking points, and it was staggering, blaming violent video games for all of this stuff that's happening, when the real problem is this schism that's building in America that's being pushed by the media. They pushed this kid into doing what he did.
Well, exactly. That's a good point. I mean, in terms of like the only way out is, I mean, think about it, the onslaught, if you're of this mindset of watching mainstream media from, I mean, across the board, essentially, of the belief that like white nationalists are taking over, they're in the White House now, they're dominating everywhere, they're turning violent, they're killing people and stuff like that. They're creating a narrative which just doesn't exist. I mean, in a country of 350 million people with as many weapons as there are and with a state of mental health being in the toilet, essentially, I'm actually surprised and sadly, right, that I have that thought. But it's amazing that more of these things don't happen, to be honest, because the rhetoric is just so extreme at this point.
Right. And we've also seen that even though gun ownership is going down, these incidents seem to be becoming more frequent. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you look at the data. What we're seeing is the total and absolute breakdown of America at its very core. And I don't think that guns can adequately explain what we're seeing. I think what more adequately explains what we're seeing is that we have a media that no longer espouses the interests of the American people of furthering our values. In fact, we have a media today that's pushing the exact opposite. They want to see a total breakdown of our very system of morality, of our laws, of our culture, of everything that makes America America. And it's no wonder with a media that pushes those sorts of things that we see people are starting to, you know, take matters into their own hands and commit violent, evil acts. When there's no morality, when there's no sense of structure to somebody's life, you know, where do they turn to? They turn to listening to the media every single day, this anti-Trump rhetoric, anti-white people, you know, hate white people. White people are the cause of all of society's evils. And it's no wonder that you get radicals like this.
Exactly. I totally agree. So we should clarify as well, you know, a big part of why we have you here today is because you did a lot of digging, really, initially, once the, and I don't know who it was that found the Twitter account that this person, the Dayton shooter, Connor Betts, had, but someone found it and quickly it started to spread. And you were one of the first ones that dug out some of the links and found some of this information of who he was following, who he retweeted, and all that kind of stuff. So you have a lot of credibility here. A lot of cred goes to you for digging this out, essentially. So tell us how that went down and how you kind of went about just digging into this.
Well, first, I definitely want to thank Nick Monroe because he was working right alongside me and going through his Twitter account and trying to pick out as much information as possible because we knew we had a deadline. Eventually, journalists were going to start picking up on this, and they do what journalists do. They try to censor, they try to cover up, and they try to obfuscate information relating to these shooters. So we knew we had a very hard time limit. So we kind of worked a little bit in tandem to pick out some of these posts, pick out his list of followers, retweets, and likes to kind of build a psychological profile of who this person was. And what we found out is he was not just a run-of-the-mill Democrat supporter. He was a radical leftist. He followed numerous far-left accounts. He followed and interacted with the Democrat Socialists of America. He interacted and got advice from the Socialist Rifle Association. He cited Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's conspiracy theory of ICE operating concentration camps. He had a Twitter post where he declared the Washington ICE attacker to be a martyr, saying he doesn't consider ICE agents to be human beings. You know, in a very short amount of time, we really kind of put together this sort of, you know, overall view of his ideology, and he was a far extreme leftist Antifa supporting radical.
Yeah, and the media has still struggled. I mean, usually after the El Paso, it was almost immediately that they found the supposed manifesto, that it's linked to him, that this is what he thought or whatever. I was watching some of the press conference come out of Dayton, and it was very few details about that. Like, what drove him? What was his ideology? And it was actually primarily people on Twitter and guys like you and Nick that was doing, Nick Monroe, that was doing the digging, who found the links. And eventually, like, I think it was heavy.com that, like, kind of picked that up first. And then, like, that almost forced CNN and forced some of these other outlets to, like, admit to it just for the sake of credibility. Like, they couldn't cover it up because it would be too damning if they just ignored it, I think.
Yeah, I think Heavy was the first news website that really started to pick it up and started to put it sort of towards the mainstream. But this is why they're trying so hard to censor new media, because if we hadn't done what we did and investigated him and gone into his Twitter account, found all of these retweets, these likes, these comments, the media never would have had to report on it. They would have just ignored it. They would have just said he was a far right wing extremist and just left it at that. The media would have carte blanche to essentially write the story the way they see fit. And that's why we're seeing websites like 8chan, like Huey Farms, being censored and destroyed, because people are able to get that information out there. People are able to research against the media and force the media out of their narrative and out of their comfort zone. They have to talk about this now.
Yeah, exactly. It's very timely in that regard. And again, I do think that, you know, you have to blame, you know, the individual. You can't, you know, you can't blame the weapon, you know, for the crime or whatever.
Right.
You have to blame the individual. But again, folks out there, keep in mind, if we're using their logic, these people that he followed, if we're using their logic, then it is the individuals that has a YouTube channel or writes article that is the responsible party. That's the logic that they've used against the right all this time. They say, oh, well, see, and that came up about the El Paso shooter. I forget which public, I think it was Heavy. They were like, oh, he followed Steven Crowder. He followed InfoWars' Paul Joseph Watson. And it's this implication that, like, okay, those are the ones that radicalized him then, and that's why he did this. I don't think that that's the truth, but that's how they're pushing it. So in this case, we have the pleasure of reversing this situation and pushing this back at them and say, okay, well, per your logic then, that means this person was radicalized by the likes of Jared Holt from Right Wing Watch, or Kelly Vale from the Daily Beast, for example, Anti-Fash Gordon, all these individuals, which you found links to, that he followed them, right?
Not only did he follow them, but he interacted with them quite often. One of the posts that I found, which showed that he was retweeting and liking content from Jared Holt. He actually liked a podcast that Jared Holt was on. You know, it's not enough. It's not simply just that he followed these people and, you know, just happened to hit the button and then never interacted with them again. He was frequently looking at their accounts, looking at the content, the things that they were saying, and he was interacting with them in real time. You can really, unlike the simple concept of the left where they say, oh, well, he followed President Trump, therefore President Trump is responsible. He was actually interacting with these people on Twitter constantly. You know, he very clearly was a fan of the work that Jared Holt did at Right Wing Watch. And this comes on the heels of Jared Holt essentially trying to blame Ali Alexander and Mike Cernovich for the shooting in El Paso. He literally said that they were responsible for it.
The irony is amazing here. Exactly. I mean, it was like, oh, there we go. And it was like, yeah, apparently there's kind of weird that scenario with Ali there, but apparently I saw a stream. He did a Periscope and he was like, he tried to explain it wasn't that I had any knowledge about what happened in El Paso. He tried to claim like I just felt something was up. He was talking kind of about God, I guess, a little bit. And like that there was like a combination between monitoring the how radicalization occurs, and then he kind of had some spiritual like connection to this. Don't ask me how how he did that, but apparently he called Cernovich, right? And I think Jared Holt tried to say that, hey, maybe FBI, maybe you want to look at this because you're kind of you're guilty if you didn't say anything about that. And so now we get something like this right back at this guy. And he tried to bury it, of course, as well. He tried to delete all these, backtrack, and I think you were quicker essentially than him to go in and find the records, right?
Right. I actually had to archive the Google cache because he had actually deleted the tweet while we were investigating. And I think a lot of accounts had started to do that once they discovered that this was, in fact, the Dayton Shooter's Twitter account. They went and they blocked him, which on Twitter, if you block somebody, it automatically forces them to unfollow your account. So not only did I catch Jared Holt interacting with this guy, but then I caught him trying to cover his tracks after the fact, which makes me really wonder if Holt may have known the moment that this Twitter account, the existence was made available to the public. It makes me really wonder if Jared Holt might have seen that and been like, oh crap, I have to delete absolutely everything.
Probably. Yeah, to be
honest.
How
much does Jared Holt know? We have to ask these questions, right?
Yeah, well, again, per their logic, we have to, right? These are the individuals that might have radicalized him. We just don't know. I'm looking for that tweet now. We've got quite a few tabs to go through. But yeah, it's true. It was like Cernovich was being blamed, and I guess Ali as well for this. Or like, why didn't they say anything? And then, of course, right back at Holt, essentially, it's pretty amazing that we got something like this. But the way the mainstream media seems to go about this is just not to report on it, to continue to cover for these individuals. They don't really focus on those links. They just say, yes, okay, he had left-wing attitudes. He was, had these opinions, blah, blah, blah. But these digging deep down into the record and finding the links and then pulling out these individuals and building profiles on them as radicalizing factors or something, we're not going to see that from the mainstream media.
Right, and they're doing their best to try to bury the lead on this story. All we've heard the last 24, 48 hours is about El Paso, El Paso, El Paso. And it's simply because they don't have an answer for this. They don't have a way to spin this to try to say, so he was a leftist, but they don't have a narrative for this. And so when they don't have that ready-made talking point to be able to kind of hand wave it away, they just throw it in the waste bin of history. They say, oh, well, this, clearly never happened. We're just not going to talk about it anymore. But
yeah,
to go into some more accounts that this guy followed, he followed not just Jared Holt, Kelly Veal, but he followed Hope Not Hate, who, as we know, popularized the milkshaking strategy where you throw a milkshake at somebody you think is an evil right winger, which led to Antifa putting cement, quick drying cement into milkshakes and throwing them at people, the same people that beat up Andy Ngo almost to the point of his death. He followed Unicorn Riot, who goes around doxing right-wingers, posting their personal information to get them fired, to destroy their lives, break apart their families. He followed Emma Gonzalez of Parkland. He followed ProPublica, which, as you know, is an Antifa research outlet that published knowing false information that was later cited in the Charlottesville cases. This guy was clearly radicalized by their own admission, was radicalized by all of these accounts, by all of these beliefs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, ProPublica did a lot of work on that. Of course, they were essentially responsible for getting the charges against Ram, essentially single-handedly. But so again, guys, for you guys who don't know, I am the Spookster was his at handle on Twitter. The name, what was it again? The Flowers for, what was it? Atomsk, I guess, was it the name?
Flowers for Atomsk.
Atomsk.
It's a reference to an anime called FLCO or Fooly Cooly.
Yes, I have no clue about the anime stuff. So it's good to have you with us here. I guess you know that, right? Yeah, that's right. Unicorn Riot, we talked about that. Here's Kelly Wheel, who I actually want to talk about a little bit later because she's been writing a lot of lies about Red Eyes. She continues to smear us. She exaggerates, she constructs things which isn't true. And she essentially is helping many of these individuals, too. We have to point that out. They're creating an environment with, due to the fact they have illegitimate and insincere reporting, where they construct what people, they put quotes in people's in their mouths. They don't fully accurately represent their beliefs, what people think. They construct an image which is more like some monstrous image than the reality. That is causing people, of course, to get an opinion about these people. And I think a lot of violence that's been driven against people on the right, including even just regular Trump supporter, as we saw in the whole wake to the lead up to the presidential election in 2016, has been spurred on by a lot of these individuals in the mainstream media, these activists, far-left activists, that are essentially creating an image of people and individuals out there that doesn't really exist. But due to that, people who are radicalized from the left, they feel justified going out doing violence against them. These people are Nazis, they're racists, right? That dehumanizes them, and that essentially opens up the door to violence. So these people need to take the responsibility for the rhetoric that they have, and so far, most of them have been getting away with it. But what do you think, Gator?
Well, you know, you look back at Charlottesville, right? What happened in Charlottesville happened because Antifa wasn't being stopped. They were allowed just to go out there and do whatever they wanted. They were punching people wearing MAGA hats in the streets. They were waving guns around. No one had to get hurt. No one had to die. But Antifa was determined to do everything they could to injure, to maim, to kill people. And the left does absolutely nothing about it. They don't care. They want to see right-wingers hurt because they were so devastated by the 2016 election that this is their last resort. This is who they are becoming. Every single day, a new article gets put out there for their 5 minutes of hate about President Trump, about the right wing, about white people, about all of the different groups, organizations, ideologies that the left wing hates. And unfortunately, until the left is willing to accept that they're responsible in some part for their crazies, it's just going to continue to get worse.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I want to highlight real quick is, you know, there's a lot of ideologies, a lot of groups that this guy really kind of, you could kind of see what radicalized him, how he kind of came up, because he followed every sort of pseudo right wing internet movement that kind of built up over the past couple of years. This guy started out as anti-Gamergate. He follows this guy, Donnie Cates, who, I don't know if you know anything about Comicsgate, but Donnie Cates was against the people of Comicsgate, who kind of broke away from the mainstream platforms and wanted to start to do their own stuff away from the forced diversity and political propagandization of mainstream comics like Marvel and DC. He followed this guy, T. Greg Doucette, who is a prolific Never Trumper, big former Romney supporter, and he's a Twitter lawyer that latched on to the sycophants that have been trying to ruin anime voice actor Vic Mignogna's life. So you kind of see that this guy was literally a part of every sort of left-wing social internet movement that's been built up over the past couple of years. This is how the left gets radicalized. They fall into these groups. They join Antifa. They join the DSA. And it's very interesting to just go over this guy's account and kind of see in almost real time how he became radicalized and how he came up with this crazy murder spree that he committed.
Yeah, here's Tim Wise, of course, another anti-white hysteric, which is retweeted by Mike Cole, who I don't know, but a lot of blue check marks here too. We should point out a lot of responsible people. You remember the verified hate, the kind of campaigns, really, that some people on our side were doing. It's just an amazing amount of open hatred that is accepted if it's directed towards the right people, right?
Exactly. And, you know, a friend of mine, Zintrax, does a lot of videos on this where he takes the blue check marks and just the absurd, ridiculous things they say. Joe Bernstein of BuzzFeed News is a great example. He tweeted once upon a time to quote, kill a straight white male on your way to work today. But Joe is never forced to accept that. He's busy trying to get this YouTuber named Soph deplatformed. I believe she's been on your program before.
Yes.
Get her deplatformed just for making edgy jokes. But then he turns around and says, oh, well, that was just an edgy joke. You can't have it both ways, blockhead Joe.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Of course, they try to weasel out of this and just say, no, it doesn't matter. But, you know, will they reflect on this? Will they slow down the next time and stop blaming people right out the gates? No. Like, of course not. They're in this to win, and they're in it to the point where they're willing to advocate for violence against people that they don't agree with. But then they write articles and say that we're the violent ones, we're the dangerous ones, right? And so, you know, the dishonesty here, and as to say, the increasing rhetoric on both sides is just like it's not going to stop. But again, today we're here to project the same level of disgust at them, frankly, for what they're doing towards us all this time. And again, I don't think it's the right to blame a person, you know, that says something online if someone else goes out and does something in its name, unless it's like directly, you know, that's already in the law, right? You can't, you know, encourage violence directly. We know that. But right. It's like, you know, people that just simply have political ideas that differ, things that are active, you know, political, you know, policy that running. Let me take this one with, while we're on that then, with an article by Kelly Whale, which this guy, you know, followed. I don't know if he retweeted anything directly or whatever, but he followed her. He's reading her work and everything. Take a look at an article like this, right? From El Paso to Christchurch, a racist lie is fueling terrorist attacks, she writes most recently. Again, more deflection, just talk about the El Paso thing. And she even writes in here, alleged killers in Christchurch, New Zealand, Poway, California, and El Paso, Texas, believed a theory that claims white people are being, quote, replaced, unquote, by people of color through mass immigration. Conspiracy theories often falsely claim that this is a deliberate effort by a number of groups demonized on the far right. But this is not a conspiracy theory. This is happening out in the open. This is not something that the United Nations literally have like policies where they recommend every single country that they mentioned in their reports to actually replace their population with immigrants due to low birth rates. Like, how many times can we prove that there is like organizations that are celebrating when news comes out about the demographic trends and the projections? But this is what they do, see, Gator. They just continue to lie, and they claim it's a conspiracy theory, and they say that there's nothing to it. But as you dug that up too, right, we could actually show that really briefly. Even the Daily Beast itself, let me go over here and pull that up real quick, had an article about this where they say, let me see, here it is, white guys are doomed, where they're actually talking about the demographic replacement that's going on. This is the level that we're dealing with here. What's your take on this?
Right. Well, we see that organizations like the SPLC, there was a picture that circulated on the internet where they were actually tracking by decade the percentage of white people in the country. You know, this is not a conspiracy theory. They openly brag about this. You know, and it's not just the Daily Beast. It's websites like Slate. It's websites like The Atlantic. You can go and you can actually see where they'll have an article saying, oh, well, this is just a conspiracy theory. And then like a week before, they're openly bragging about, you know, the white people being a minority.
It's amazing. It's amazing that they're getting away with it. But see, you must be on the part of where you celebrate it as a good thing. If you speak up against the ideology and say, actually, we think this is a bad idea, we probably should change the policies of these things. Well, then you're a dangerous conspiracy theories. And just because you talk about a political ideology, a policy, which most Western countries today unfortunately have implemented, then that's a disqualification for being part of the political discourse. That's essentially how they're trying to move the spectrum so far to the left that you can't even question an open policy, which, I mean, has any country ever voted in the West voted for mass migration? As far as I know, right? So what are we left to do? We're left to talk about it, try to raise awareness about it. And now they're even trying to shut that down and linking it with clear violent attacks and terrorism despite most, I mean, everyone I know personally has never advocated for violence. They know that this is something which defeats the purpose, because the establishment can use it as they do in these cases and say, see, this is the reason. It's dangerous for you to talk about these things. So we're just going to shut you down. So it feeds into their narrative and it serves them better than it does us, right?
Right. And the El Paso shooter was an eco-terrorist. He believed that terrorism in the name of the environment was a good thing. But you don't see the media rushing to shut down global warming hysterians, you know, people that are absolutely crazy. Either the world's going to end in 10 years. We have to do something about the climate. You don't see them going after Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about that sort of stuff because her ideology lines up with his. But they'll go and they'll try to link him to President Trump. They'll go and they'll try to blame all right wingers for what happened in Christchurch. They won't do anything to acknowledge that their rhetoric might have a little bit to do with some of these incidents.
Absolutely. Yep, that's right. So here's one of the reports, and again, many other organizations that are pushing for this too, but it's the United Nations talking about an aging population, and what do we do? Well, maybe replacement migration is a solution to it. This report is 2 decades old. Again, virtually every country that was mentioned in here have implemented these policies, right? So it's not a crazy conspiracy theory. The trends are there. The demographics is there. But this is how they try to gaslight us into thinking that it's not really happening. And I think that they also think if we can just limit and stop their ability to communicate what it is that's happening, then it will go away, right? And no one is ever going to say anything again. I mean, as you know, Gator, once you begin to shut down the very few avenues that are left that exist to communicate legitimate political, concerns and grievances, that's when you're creating dangerous individuals, because they feel that they don't have any other way of getting heard, unfortunately. And I think that's why the establishment is actually mostly the ones responsible for actually many of the shooters that we've seen, if we are to take everything that we hear at face value, I want to preface. But what do you think about that?
You're absolutely right. You know, we don't have a gun problem. We have sort of a mental health problem. But the really big problem that we have in this country are these rich coastal elites, globalists, that are seeking to shut down debate, that are seeking to destroy the core values that make America, America. And it's no wonder that we see these people that they're defeated. They don't know what to do. They're mentally ill. And when they feel like they have no mouth and can't scream, they just absolutely go to the extremes. And unfortunately, this sort of radicalization helps the establishment justify shutting down debate, shutting down dissent, and trying to manipulate the political process to ensure that their selected candidates, that their selected people win elections, and also, you know, shut down new media outlets that are investigating this stuff that goes against the narrative. It's unfortunate because we're seeing our very way of life chipped away piece by piece, that very morality, that culture, that idea that makes the United States of America what it is and what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and the radicalization continues. They were, not too long ago, Antifa was outside of the house of Tucker Carlson in D.C. Now, the latest one I saw today, they protest outside of Mitch McConnell's house, threatening to stab the mother bleeper in the heart. That's one thing. And they catch this on camera, too, of course, which is kind of interesting. You know, it's like here we see one of the main protesters with Elizabeth Warren. And that's actually another connection, too, right? As you said, AOC, because of the climate alarmism to the El Paso shooter was kind of ignored. Like, oh, we only have 12 more years left. We have to do something. And the guy in the manifesto in El Paso, right, he was talking about we must be fewer people, right, because all the resources are going to get eaten up. Like, they will never recognize this. But the Dayton shooter, he was pro-Elizabeth Warren. Here we can see one of these people outside of Mitch McConnell's home.
Pro-Bernie Sanders, too.
Pro-Bernie Sanders, too. That's right. Hugging one of them, Elizabeth Warren, hugging this protester. They're never going to get they're never going to get the level of whipping for this. That imagine if Trump would have been caught in a situation like this, where he was hugging a dude who was like responsible of going in front of another politician's house, talking about stabbing them in the heart. I mean, what do you think the media would have done?
Oh, they would absolutely crucify him. They'd be demanding that everybody that was involved be thrown in jail. You know, they would cite Christchurch. They would cite what happened in El Paso, and they would say that, you know, look at what the rhetoric of President Trump does. He's radicalizing these people that are threatening mass violence against people on the other side. But the left is never, ever going to acknowledge the radicalization that occurs on their side. You know, this comes just days after the Dayton shooter, who was a far left radical, went and shot up a bar. They're out there demanding the death of Mitch McConnell. Like, how tone deaf can one party, can any of these people actually be?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? It's absolutely amazing. What's another one, too, I wanted to pull up here. In terms of the garlic shooter, you found this one. It's actually pretty interesting. FBI media wrong on garlic festival shooter's white supremacy ideology, despite social media posts. Now, there was only one post, as far as I know, which said, was an Instagram post, and it said, "Read might is right." And then Ben Collins and some of these other people that are actually referenced, you know, as being part of the kind of the circle that the Dayton shooter followed and stuff like that. Let me actually pull that up again. They were saying that that was a white supremacist manifesto, when it's a book written by a pseudonym, Ragnar Redbeard, in like 1820s. It's largely on social Darwinism, but it turned into, within the moment of like five minutes, it turned into a white supremacy manifesto. I don't know if you caught any of that, but it's like same thing there. There didn't really exist a clear motive in the garlic shooter, but the media ran with it quickly. So this is a pretty interesting admission by the FBI. What do you make of it?
Well, as we've seen, the left immediately moves once something like this happens to try to link the person to this conspiracy theory of white supremacy, which doesn't really exist in America today, hasn't existed in decades. You know, since guys ran around in pillow sheets, right? Now they're all just FBI agents that LARP is those guys. You know, that ideology doesn't really exist in the modern world today, but they try to link it because it's a useful tool. You know, whoever gets the news out first are the ones that really get to like write the idea in people's minds of, oh, this guy must obviously be a white supremacist. He must be an evil right-wing Nazi, you know. And they rush to print all of this in, all of these, this fake news, this propaganda. And then the story actually comes out. It's like, oh, by the way, he wasn't actually right wing. He wasn't a white supremacist or whatever. Sorry about that. And then the story goes away. Nobody talks about it. But that first initial impression is left in everyone's minds. Had we not done our work to expose who the Dayton shooter really was, there were a lot of blue check marks, leftist journalists on Twitter that were already trying to call the Dayton shooter a white supremacist, a fascist, a neo-Nazi, et cetera, et cetera. Had we not exposed that information, that would have been the narrative.
Yeah, that's right. Unbelievable. Some other people here too, by the way, that I am the spookster followed, and supposedly it was some kind of, I mean, yeah, it was some, he had some Satanist patches or something, right? He listened to metal and stuff like that too. So people kind of, you know, they took that. It's funny though to see how everyone rushed to grab and hold on to something which they can use to smear and blame the other side. It is pretty incredible when you think about it. And I always thought it was despicable of using these events for political purposes and essentially try to smear everyone else before the bodies are even cold. I don't know. That's not going to stop. That's the norm now. That's just what's going to continue to happen from now on out, I think, in a way.
Well, it's unfortunate because, you know, just because you follow somebody, you like their content, doesn't mean you necessarily co-sign absolutely everything they have to say. Ethan Ralph on the Killstream had the former admin of 8chan on Hot Wheels, Frederick Brennan, and those two don't necessarily see eye to eye, but it was good to have that conversation with him, you know, vis-a-vis what's going on with 8chan. you know, you don't have to co-sign absolutely everything that somebody says when you follow and interact with them. But this is the world that the left has built. This is the ideology that they've let foster, you know, where, you know, if you like a tweet from one account, you're automatically responsible for absolutely everything past, present, and future that that yeah. account does, that that person does.
Stupid.
And so it's important to hold them to their own standards, to force them to have to acknowledge that they're wrong, because otherwise they're going to go along with this, with this clown world stuff, where they can have their cake and eat it too. The right wing is responsible for absolutely everything that anyone in the right wing sphere of politics does, but the left is never held accountable for when a crazed Antifa loon shoots up a bar of blue collar Americans.
Yeah, that's right. So this is pretty interesting too. I didn't actually see the clip yet, but Jim Watkins, he's the founder of 8chan, who I think currently it's down, right? It was actually Cloudflare that kicked them off their service in the same way that they kicked off Daily Stormer in the wake of the Charlottesville rally, right?
Yeah, Jim Watkins is the current owner of 8chan. The founder was Frederick Brennan, who I...
Oh, okay. Oh, so was that the founder? Yeah. Sorry, I thought it was a co-founder, so I kind of figured it was this guy. Okay, gotcha. Anyway, so he confirmed that this manifesto from the El Paso shooter was not, in fact, uploaded by the murderer himself. Let's listen to this here, see what it says.
The El Paso shooter posted on Instagram, not 8chan. Later, someone uploaded a manifesto. However, that manifesto was not uploaded by the Walmart shooter. I don't know if he wrote it or not, but it was not uploaded by the murderer. That is clear. And law enforcement was made aware of this before most people had even heard the horrific news. First of all...
Interesting. Okay, because they said, like, I heard some reports, like, within a minute or something, as short as 1 minute, it was taken down, and the feds knew that it was, like, the supposed shooter, the Walmart El Paso shooter. Did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, that was the case, that 8chan had seen the post, and they took it down almost immediately and notified law enforcement. That's what Jim Watkins was talking about. Thing I find really interesting is that it wasn't originally posted on 8chan. Jim Watkins, I tweeted to the 8chan account and asked them if they could make those logs publicly available for people to see.
Yeah.
And maybe the location identity of who originally posted it on 8chan. But it's very interesting to see that they've run with this narrative that it was 8chan, he posted on 8chan. He posted it on Instagram. Nobody's going to go out there and seriously argue that Instagram and Facebook need to immediately be kicked off of Cloudflare, to be kicked out of their service providers, just simply because he posted that manifesto there.
Yeah, what about the New Zealand shooter? He streamed it to Facebook. Bring down Facebook, right? That will never happen. How many murders now and violent acts and kidnappings and shootings have taken place there? But you don't get the same response as you do against a Gab or an 8chan, for example, because the establishment don't like people to be in an environment where they have free speech. That's how simple I think it is, to be honest.
Exactly. They're scared of the idea of unfettered free speech, which is free from big tech censorship, because people can get this information out there. People can talk about, you know, what's really going on in the country today. It scares these elites. It scares these political class people, because they're no longer able to control that flow of information through the media. They're no longer able to keep their narratives intact. So places like 8chan, places like Gab, places like Kiwi Farms have to go, because they have to have absolute control over the flow of information. They want to be able to control content and create context.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely right. So to remind people, and you posted this too, one of the people that, I don't know if you dug it out or if you just, you saw it in the affidavit, I think, too, but the links or the reality, I guess we can call it, that the FBI or someone working for them or something like that, an informant or something, was in and posting after the, was it, it was after the New Zealand shooting, I think this happened, right?
New Zealand shooting.
Yeah, exactly. So they were in, because you could clearly see when it says you know, it's like an, it's anonymous, but you get an ID tag associated with your post, or if it's IP tied or something like that. But if you do, you know, look at a page, it says you right there. So they use that to print out the screen, scan it, and that's what they use in the affidavit, meaning that the people who are gathering this for the FBI when the affidavit was created had been in and posting on the board itself, right?
Right. They call it Fed posting, right? Where they
literally
literal Fed posting, where they're trying to encourage people in this particular image board thread to go out and commit violence, to go out and commit these terroristic actions. So the person that was actually writing all of this stuff was the person that gave the FBI these screenshots. It stores a cookie on your browser if you make a post on 8chan and has that little U tag to kind of indicate that you were the one that originally posted it. How embarrassing is it that FBI informants or agents actually left that information in there? They were so incompetent that they didn't actually remove the fact that it was them that was posting that information in the first place.
It's amazing. It should be against the law. It should be against the law to do that. It should not be, we know this happens time and time again, but many times they've literally they hand weaponry to people that aren't able to get them on their own and stuff, sting operations. They rope people up. And of course, that's why people have questions about it. And that's why they say, is this just completely organic, or is it someone that has been coerced? Are they using someone? Are they manipulating them? What's happening, right? We're usually, at least on this show, we come from a perspective where we question these things and the authenticity of it. But we know that, you know, with posts like that, like we showed, we know that they are involved in at least one way or another trying to, you know, insert opinions or influence people. I think even many other people went through the boards and took out a whole lot more. It was they try to blame Russia in one of them. They try to cover for the Mossad in some. It was all this kind of weirdness. I don't know if you remember any of the other posts that they had done specifically.
Yeah, I do. I do remember the Mossad one. I remember that they were really pushing the Putin angle, the Russia conspiracy stuff. They were in another thread, literally calling people feds and saying, "Well, you're a Fed. You're a, you know, you glow in the dark and stuff like that." So they were, you know, trying to cast aspersions as to their real motives and where they really come from. At the same time, they were trying to push all of these establishment talking points and narratives, so they didn't do a really good job kind of masking their origin.
No, that's why I had also a lot of questions about the El Paso shooter. It was just something that felt contrived with it, and I don't know. It's very difficult when you rely so much on the law enforcement to just give all the details to us. But you know, as we saw recently, the FBI is now basically trying to make conspiracy, what they deem to be conspiracy theories, on par with the terrorism. I don't know if you saw that story.
I did see that, and they mentioned specifically the QAnon stuff. They mentioned, I noticed they didn't mention anything about the Russia conspiracy, that, you know, Trump is some sleeper agent for the Russian government, which was patently absurd and was spread by people like Greg Doucette and Rick Wilson, people that the Dayton shooter followed. You know, he followed a lot of people that were into the Russia conspiracy and thought that Trump was some secret Russian agent for Vladimir Putin. So at the same time that they're trying to go after right wingers for, quote unquote, being conspiracy theorists, you know, they're sitting there running with all of these absolutely insane narratives, like that the world is going to end because of climate change. Trump is a Russian bot. It's the dichotomy is staggering.
Yeah, but that's not going to radicalize anybody at all. That's totally fine saying that we're going to die in 12 years. I've seen clips of little girls crying in front of the camera because they think, why are the adults not doing anything? We're all going to die within 12 years. It's this is mind control, psychological operations on these young kids. It's amazing.
MK Ultra on steroids.
Exactly. I mean, it's amazing. I rewatched some 1976 old ABC documentary about mind control. It was it was Peter Altmaier or something like that reporting on it. And it was some really, really weird shit that they managed to dig out at that point. You know, they were experimenting with LSD. They were kind of trying to see if they could wipe create a clean slate of the mind. They were trying to work
Tabula rasa.
Exactly. They were trying to work on ways that you can essentially create an individual which goes against its own instincts, including their own survival instincts. In other words, you could put them in harm's way and stuff like that. And I doubt, I mean, some of the MKUltra documents have been released throughout the years, and they've kind of claimed that, well, we retired that kind of program. But I doubt if they were so advanced in back in 1976 when that information started to come out, that they would just lay that down, walk away from it, say, actually, there was nothing there. We gave up on it. they probably refined the techniques. And again, I'm not saying that any of these shooters that we've seen recently are that, or that they have been, you know, tampered with, or whatever you want to call it. But the fact is, Gator, the possibility still exists, and we should be allowed to ask those questions and not to be considered domestic terrorists if we ask the questions. I mean, this is absurd.
Absolutely. You look at Woodward and Bernstein, right? If they weren't allowed to ask questions, they never would have exposed the Watergate scandal, which, you know, is constantly cited by the left as proof that the right wing is bad, right? So people should be allowed to question narratives. People should be allowed to question those that have power over them, because that is healthy for rational discourse, and not just America, but around the world. But time and time again, we see that they're scared of people asking questions, looking into this information, you know, thinking about things, talking about things. And it really just kind of shows how fragile a lot of the power brokers, the people that, you know, affect our daily lives, these central government figures, it shows how fragile they are, because they have to dismiss and hand wave away anyone asking questions as, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. You know, I covered on my show, Gator Time, just a few weeks ago, the information that they released about possible unidentified flying objects, as they call them, unidentified aerial phenomenon. Now, that was a conspiracy theory that they just hand waved away. And then all of a sudden they have to acknowledge it, and they say, okay, fine. Yes, we actually have been tracking these things. If people weren't allowed to ask questions, they never would have gotten disclosures like that, which I think is one of the primary focuses behind these people trying to do everything in their power to shut down people asking questions, people doing research. They don't want to have to make these disclosures available publicly. The intelligence community wants to continue to run operations against American people and on American people, and they want to do so unabated.
Yeah, the Navy released, let me pull up a couple of the articles here. I think they're blocking, because I'm blocking the ads, but yeah, anyway. Yeah, they released UFO footage. It was tracked by, I think, the what do they call it, like the onboard computer that, like, picks up moving objects and stuff like that. And it was, like, 3 or 4 clips. Not that much, but, I mean, but it's still a recognition that, like, they didn't know what it was. It could be experimental. It could be other military technology from either the U.S. that they're not aware of, or it could be other countries, etc. The point is, it's going on, but as you say, for years, stuff like that have been shot down as being ridiculous and stupid, and then it comes out from the military itself. Like, yes, it was something. We don't know what it is. We're investigating, right? I mean, so that puts, like, everything else in perspective. We must be have the room and the leeway to look into these things. What do you make, though, just going back to the Dayton shooter quickly again, what do you make of that? Does that seem 100% organic to you? I haven't actually looked into that much to the discrepancies. Much so far in the El Paso shooting, and I didn't really have even time yet to look at the Dayton shooting, because they're just happening back to back now. But what's your instinct about that? Is it organic? Is what they claim happened, is that what it is? What do you make of it? What do you think?
I'm a little skeptical about his particular motives, simply for the fact that so much contrary information has come out about that. You know, they were trying to say that he was a white supremacist, and then we find out that he's an eco-terrorist, that he thinks the world's going to end in 12 years. He thinks that people should have access to universal basic income, which are two big hallmarks of the left, you know. And with his manifesto being posted immediately on 8chan after it was posted on Instagram and not by his own account, people reported that there were multiple gunmen, and then they say, well, actually there was only one. You know, when you see all of this information that seems to conflict, people are naturally skeptical of it, right? You naturally question the official story. You naturally wonder, is there any there? You know, what's going on? What don't we know? And so I remain a little bit skeptical about the official account of what went on in El Paso.
Yeah, I totally agree with you with El Paso. We looked into it as well. It was a lot of contradictions early on. I know that eyewitnesses are kind of, it can be obviously very dodgy in situations where high trauma is involved and stuff, but I right. still think that you would be able to tell the difference between did you see one person or did you see three people with guns, right? I mean, that's a pretty,
right.
It's not like asking, oh, which model of car did they escape with or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, where you obviously can go wrong or what color they had on their shirt or something, but you, I think logically would be able to tell the difference between one person or three or possibly even four people. Which, what, two witnesses leads said that, an early law enforcement officer had reported back to the media as well. It was like multiple shooters, possibly one even in a adjacent mall like the Dillard's or something like that. So a lot of weirdness like that. And then immediately, as we say, that was covered up and just assumed, no, it was just the lone gunman and that was it. I haven't heard actually any follow-up to that, as usual, have you?
And not only that, but you've also got the situation that happened in Las Vegas, right? We still don't know
what
really went on behind the scenes, but they're suddenly able to tell us absolutely everything that went on in El Paso 5 minutes after it happened.
That's what's the clue for me, that we're fed the information immediately. In Dayton, in Ohio, it took quite a while for that to come out. We didn't know who it was. It wasn't immediately released, so people, of course, kind of begin speculating. But what about the Dayton, Ohio shooting? Organic? Was that the guy who they claim it was? Did it happen the way that the law enforcement tell us it happened? What do you think?
Well, the difference between Dayton and El Paso is that we have a lot more video available of what happened in Dayton. We have his own Twitter posts, his own the accounts that he followed, we can kind of build that psychological profile that shows how he became radicalized. I'm more willing to accept that the Dayton guy was this quote-unquote lone wolf, as it were, just simply from looking at his own posts. You can see where he starts out as just your typical, like, leftist. He starts to get into the Antifa, the DSA stuff. You know, he starts to get into, like, the anti-Gamergate, anti-Comicsgate, anti-Vic Mignogna stuff. And then he really starts to get into the Russia conspiracy. He starts to get into the, you know, armed resistance, the black masks of Antifa. And then the last tweet that he likes right before he does what he does is explicitly advocating for violence. So, you know, I could be more willing to accept that maybe this guy was just a far left radical that had just radicalized to the point that he thought that this was his only way out, that this was his only choice, his only solution. But whereas with the El Paso shooter, we don't really know anything about him aside from the fact that his father apparently was some sex cultist that followed that John the God guy in Brazil. That's really about the only information we truly know about him.
Yeah, the dad is, it's interesting, Brian Crucius. And I know this, I can clarify that here too. We covered this quite extensively in the latest Weekend Warrior show that we did, which is an exclusive show for members. You can only watch it at redeyesmembers.com. But regardless, a lot of information we went through in there. And he was seen with like a kind of a Star of David behind him and stuff like that. But the guy was clearly like into New Age things. And for those who know, some of those kind of symbolisms that they use, which is like the Kabbalah, some people call it, or even like the Seal of Solomon, and he was like into all these New Agey healing technologies and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly, like a bunch of different things. So I wouldn't say that reflects his ethnicity. It reflects his spiritual belief more than anything else. But as you say, that John of God weird connections there, and they ran like a sex cult in Brazil. A lot of underage girls and all kinds of people were abused by him. And apparently, Brian Cruz, who's the father of the shooter, he had helped them to rent space in America, I guess, and he had helped them to transport like these big boxes with crystals into some office or something like that. So I don't know, it doesn't say much, but when you take a lot of these different things into account, it creates kind of a weird picture, at least of the family. There was that connection to the hospital as well, which was he worked at a counselor at, I think it was a Greenfield or something. I forget what it was called now. But he was shut down because of basically so poor management. People were killing themselves in this facility and stuff like that. And his dad was a counselor there for a period of time. So, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff around it, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think it bears repeating that, you know, while all this stuff is going on, that suddenly everybody's forgotten about Jeffrey Epstein, right? That's another conspiracy theory. Yeah, that's another quote-unquote conspiracy theory that wasn't real until suddenly it was very real, right? That there's a guy like him that's running this underground human trafficking slash pedophile ring off this island. The FBI is like, oh, well, that's a conspiracy theory. That's obviously not happening. But now we know, yes, that is actually happening. It's not just a conspiracy theory.
It's crazy. It's crazy town. It's amazing. There's so many of these stories that are happening back to back that it's difficult to just have time to weave them out and, like, you know, follow up on each one of them and stuff like that. So it's definitely crazy. What else?
By design.
What was that?
I said by design, you know.
Well, exactly.
Inundate you with all of these events and information and hope that you'll forget about the inconvenient truths.
That is absolutely right. Let's go through a couple of more of these. I don't know if there's some that we didn't really talk about. There was the we kind of talked about the Cernovich and the connection to that he had, you know, was first accused, right? I don't know if he followed up on anything, and he helped to get the tweet out, I guess, right, that you dug up about Holt and some of the other people. Was that his connection to this?
Yeah. So I was working alongside Nick Monroe, and kind of the way that I structured it is I found the Holt connection early on in my investigation, but that I think that was probably the most juiciest part. So I started to trickle out information about some of the accounts that he had talked about. Nick Monroe on his Telegram was posting kind of like his ideological views, some of the more left-wing accounts that he was posting. But I really tried to focus on, like, building it up slowly but surely. You know, accounts like Anti-Fash Gordon that goes around and doxing and attacks right-wingers. I posted that he follows people like Mike Stuckberry, who is a lot of people are familiar with him. He's this anti-right-wing, far-left radical. And so I kind of structured it in a way so that it built up to all of these accounts. And then I waited to see what Jared Holt's response would be once this information started to get out there. And I noticed that he was immediately trying to cover his tracks. Unfortunately for Jared, I already had the information available. And so the moment that he started deleting tweets, that he blocked the account so he'd pop off the follow list, I released my tweet that showed that this guy was interacting with Jared Holt, that this guy was talking to him. And guys like Jack Posobiec and Mike Cernovich kind of noticed that because, you know, they had been frequent targets of, you know, the internet hall monitors like Jared Holt. So they immediately picked up on the story and they started to spread it far and wide.
Yeah, that's good that they were helpful in getting the word out. But no, a lot of points to you for sticking to it and finding some of these things. And again, the cover up is I think it's very telling, right? Because on some level, I think that they know many of these individuals that this is how they play the game, the blame game, guilt by association, classic fallacy. It doesn't mean anything, right? Actually, things should stand on their own accord. And again, to reiterate that point, we're just using their logic here. And I'm not the one that has started to go around blaming people for, you know, who did something and then whoever they followed or something are the guilty party. That's their tactic, right? And I don't know what you think about that, but I think more we're going to see more and more of these kinds of things because with the increased rhetoric that they and together with the media establishment have been holding now for several years, you know, more people are essentially going to snap and freak out because they're scared and they think that we're in trouble. You know, as someone said, we have to like the only way out now is like we have to turn to violence. And as you said, they were glorifying the ICE shooter as well. And I saw that across the board. There was like memorials for him, and it was like he was this great guy. And now you have this, you know, one of these Antifa events. They're gonna, I think they were gonna actually go to El Paso in one of them. There was a tour that they're doing. I forget all the details about it, but some people exposed it. We showed it a couple of days ago too, but it was like they're doing a tour, which basically is like about a mass protest against ICE and stuff like that. So, you know, we could see a whole lot more, unfortunately, a whole lot more violence out of this just because they're so psychotic about, you know, what they think that they need to do to, like, I don't know, save people or save themselves or something. You know, I hear many of them are like, well, we're doing this in self-defense because the Nazis are out there and like killing us. And it's like, no, that's not happening. Like, you're delusional. It's like that's not what's happening here. But in their mind, this is what they think. And so they're being kind of reinforced by the media establishment and all of these left-wing activists that are covering and operating as journalists underneath the surface, like Jared Holt, like Kelly Vail, and all these people. There's like a small clique, a circle, that are an incestuous group that are all kind of reinforcing this belief, and they're allowed to operate within somewhat larger media organizations, and they are not held accountable at all. But what do you think going forward here? Are we going to see more of this, or are we going to see less?
Unfortunately, we're going to see more of this as the media is allowed to essentially gaslight these far leftists to push them towards violence, because they need that. They need these Antifa, the black bloc, as they call them, to go out there and commit violence, because it's all about trying to intimidate, you know, not these Nazi caricatures that they're trying to create of right wingers. They want to scare, you know, the dad with the MAGA hat who, you know, goes to Trump rallies and loves America, loves guns, loves Trump. They want to scare that guy into not showing up in November. They want to make him think twice about daring to wear his MAGA hat in public. You know, they want to scare him that, you know, maybe they can look up his voter information after the election and show up at his front door, like a lot of these leftists did with Proposition 8 in California. You know, this is what it's about. It's about intimidation. It's about scaring people into no longer being able to speak, no longer being able to exercise their right to vote, to speak, to associate, any of this stuff. And so what we're seeing with the media, these characters like Kelly Wheel, like Jared Holt, is they are the filter through which these far left radicals like Emily Gorsinski, like Mark Bray, these pro-Antifa people, Christopher Mathias, you know, they follow these Antifa people. They're intimately involved with these Antifa people. And then they filter that information through other journalists to try to write pro-Antifa articles, to write, you know, the right wing is threatening your life. You need to go out and do something about it. You know, Owen Leinhart wrote this entire piece about these associations between journalists that are just openly pro-Antifa, and they're not ashamed about it at all. You don't care that they're being linked with these accounts, but they're just allowed to go out there and write these absolutely insane accelerationist points of view, and they're not being called on it by other quote-unquote journalists. They're just allowed to radicalize and, you know, get these Antifa people to go out there and punch poor boomer dad with his MAGA hat in the face because he's a Nazi.
Right. No, they cover for them.
His father probably fought against the Nazis in World War II, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And now it's like, what was the meme that went? It was like, I'm not going to be called a Nazi for the things of, like, living in a way that my grandfather did, who actually fought the Nazis. I remember the meme is like the D-Day or something. They're coming aboard, you know. But it's
memes, yes.
Yeah. But it's largely true, you know, in that regard, that it's like they have moved, again, the needle so far to their way, to the left. I mean, essentially, I know that we're talking about conglomerates here. It's not as simply as saying it's the left. There's international finance that are essentially on their side. It's globalism. It's international groups. It's corporations. It's like, it's a big mesh and a weave, a web of different groups and organizations that are essentially try to squash and stamp out nationalism and stamp out a way of life, which, again, our grandparents took for granted. It was not based in hate or anything like that. It was based in looking out for what's best ultimately for your family in the close circle, and then in the extension, your country, right, as a nation, and looking out for your interest first. And that's what they're trying to make seem is unnatural, or it's hateful, or it's bad, or we have to stop that and stuff. So it's been so radicalized. They have been so radicalized in this process as well. They're just normal, rational behaviors. They're trying to make it seem absurd and weird. But I don't think that's the point, though. I don't think it's working anymore. I think that narrative is kind of slowly collapsing. I think more and more people are waking up and realizing that something's awfully wrong with a picture of where these people are trying to drive us towards, of what they're trying to do, what their accomplishments or however you want to call that, but what they're trying to create. It's like every day there's new clown world type of things that are happening, and we're just meant to sit back and assume that this is normal now. There's always like there's new grievance groups, and if you oppose like giving you know 3 year olds like you know hormones or puberty blockers later to keep them in a perpetual state of being a child that have changed a gender or something, that you're the bigot and you're the weird one. I just don't think that that's holding up too good anymore. I don't know, what do you think, Gator?
I mean, when you see when a normal red-blooded American sees a picture of these like Satanist drag kings, drag queens, reading storybooks to children as old as young as 5 years old, like it freaks the hell out of people, and it should. It's good. It's good that parents are upset about this, that people are upset about this. But in clown world, you're a bigot because you don't think that a convicted pedophile in a dress should read to children. And this is the kind of world that these people are trying to create. They want to create this world where it's not okay to question something like that. But if you dare have this idea that, you know, these elites are responsible for trying to, you know, drive down the percentage of white people in the country, you're a conspiracy theorist.
It's so absurd, you know, it's so absurd, but that's what we're looking at, you know, playing some of the footage here from one photo, but there are others too. And it's interesting that they're always trying to, they have this view though, that it's like, it's not good until it's a demon that's like reading to your kid, you know, it's like, it's like this absurd, I don't know, it's amazing. Anyway, I'll go out of that, but Gator, let's see if there's anything else that you want to add, I guess, to the discussion that we kind of missed, a big thing here before we wrap up. And again, obviously, I want to thank you for your time. It's great having you here. Great job on just finding some of these connections. It's important to get the word out about this and fling some of this shit back in the faces of these people that have been flinging the shit first. And I'm usually not the one to play the blame game, but the fact is, if this is how their logic operates, then I'm perfectly fine with serving that right back at them. Because a lot of these people are responsible for creating essentially profiles on people like myself, like my wife, on Red Ice, on many others, many of our good friends who I know are good, fine people. They're kind-hearted. They don't hate anybody. They have lots of love for themselves and their people around them and their nation and their people. But, you know, they're tired of what's being done against them. We are tired about what's being done against us. But these individuals, because of their false reporting, because of their targeting, have gotten us, you know, banned from places and blacklisted, thrown off of PayPal and banks, and we can't use certain services anymore. They've gotten our websites hacked and all this stuff. So they have a lot of responsibility for creating a lot of the hate out there. So I do not at all feel bad when something like this happens, and just projecting this right back at them. And just saying, essentially, well, how does it feel? Now you're the guilty party. According to your own logic, you're the ones who are radicalizing these individuals, and you are the ones who are responsible.
Exactly. You know, it's okay. It's okay to fling the little bit of crap back at them because of all of the terrible things that they've done to people, you know, in the right-wing sphere of influence, the right-wing ideology. And I don't feel bad at all about, you know, exposing Jared Holt for, you know, possibly radicalizing this guy, right?
Because of course not.
It's what Jared Holt would have done.
Yes.
It's what he would have done had the tables been turned.
And in fact, and he tried to do it too, right away with the El Paso shooter. He was right on it.
Yeah.
Blaming people and stuff. And then it's like, oh no, but then he's trying to cover up and say, well, no, that's not, that didn't happen. Let me delete all the tweets and unfollow and all that shit. It's just, it's so transparent and it's so dishonest, you know?
Absolutely. You know, and we see this dichotomy between the left and the right. The left is all about hating right-wingers, calling Trump a Nazi. You go out and punch a guy in a MAGA hat that's in the street. There was that shop owner. You could see half of his face had just basically been turned to mush. Somebody just punched and probably damaged his vision for life. The left is all about hate. They want to talk about we need to pass hate speech laws and all this stuff. The left is about hate. They have internalized this hatred of anything that isn't them. Whereas if you look at the right wing, most people just want to be left alone. They have a love of their country, a love of their culture, a love of their family, their friends. They have a love of life, but they want to try to portray right wingers as this hate-filled group, when the right wing has always been more accepting of different viewpoints, of different ideologies, of different perspectives than the left ever has. And unfortunately, as the left continues this frog march into socialism, into communism, it's only going to get worse. They're only going to become more violent, more destructive. Even centrists, center leftists, are being shown the door. They're being kicked off of all of these platforms. And unless the right wing is able to call this stuff out, to be able to expose this, you're going to see, as the left becomes more and more radical, they're going to get more and more desperate to try to silence voices, to try to end any sort of dissent.
Yeah, completely. I totally agree. Here's one more I want to show, put a little more detail on that. Ben Collins, which is one of these guys that they wheel out on MSNBC every time something happens. He's happily blaming, the internet, and he talks about the hacker 4chan all the time.
Cue the exploding van for
and it's hilarious to see. It was one, especially after the El Paso shooter. He's sitting with his host on MSNBC and like a boomer explaining what 4chan and 8chan is, and it's hilarious. So Flowers for Atoms was retweeting Ben Collins. So you have to wonder, right? Are these people in the mainstream media, MSNBC, are they responsible? Yes, they are, and we should hold them accountable to what they have done, and the lives and the blood that they're helping to spill now. I'm more than happy to expose this. But Gator, please plug some of your stuff here towards the end, so we get some of that word out too. You're doing a show yourself. What was it? Every Wednesday you do the show?
Every Wednesday at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. I haven't quite set the time, but it's usually around then. It's youtube.com/thegatorgamer. I also stream a little bit of gaming on dlive.tv/gator.
Fantastic. And then, of course, you still co-host, I don't know if every show, but some shows with Ralph, the Killstream, right?
I pop on every now and then, though I'm no longer the full-time co-host.
Awesome. Well, you guys do a great job. Thank you, Gator, for coming on. I really appreciate your time today. We'd love to have you back, of course. Keep up the good work. Keep the sleuthing. Is that how you pronounce it? I've only seen it spelled. It's sleuthing. digging deep and finding some of these things. So well done for that, Gator, and I really appreciate your time again today. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show, Henrik.
All right, you bet. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. All right, well, guys, we're going to wrap up there. Thank you to everyone who's watching the live stream. And I guess there was a couple of super chats. I guess we can just go through those real quick, guys, before we wrap up. And I do apologize for my voice as well. I did a two-hour show before this, before we decided to jump on and do the live stream here. So my voice is, like, running ragged. I'm, like, completely burnt out in the old throat. But anyway, guys, let me find those here. We have the Entropy software, of course, if you want to bypass YouTube and their 30% super chats and all that kind of stuff. Just a couple that came in here, so I'll read those real quick. Take my guns, Orange Daddy. I for one, trust the plan, says the Biden Touch for $5. Thank you, Biden Touch. Appreciate that. Laser-guided logic for $25 says, Red Ice Rocks, keep doing what you're doing, guys. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Canadian Longboarder for $5 says, when is Red Ice going to make the Dalai Lama t-shirt? We should do that very soon, actually. Good proposal. We have some other ones, of course, in the store. In the meantime, if you want to check that out, redice.tv/store. Thank you so much, by the way, for the support on that. But yes, we are going to make a Dalai Lama shirt. And then there's one more from AltFit. Thank you, AltFit. AltFit usually send a couple when we do the stream, so thank you for that. For 10, says, Blue Ticks and Media, in echoing quotes, now calling for suspension of Kiwi Farms. That's right, and other free speech platforms. No calls against Gab, though. They can't do anything due to it being open source now. Ha ha. Yeah, that's true. Gab has gone over to, like, being open source. And I did see that Kiwi Farms was threatened. They were threatened, of course, after the New Zealand shooter as well, I believe. I think there was some material posted there. But yeah, definitely. I mean, it's amazing. 8chan, of course, down currently as well. So we'll see how that goes. Kind of how they came after Daily Stormer after Charlottesville as well. Cloudflare is primarily, I guess, responsible for that. So we'll see how that pans out. Guys, there was a couple that came in on DLive as well. I guess we can just clear those off. A couple of donations. WTMV says red pill or blue pill. Regards from Finland. I think we'll always go for the red pill, to be honest. Thank you for the donation. And also Blue Fox 70 or 070 says, Mommy Tulsi will be the queen of Neo-America. Yeah, we'll see about that. They're trying to show her the door, so to speak, at least during the debates. We'll see if that happens. But guys, thank you so much for the super chats and everything. Really appreciate that. Thank you for being with us here today for the live stream. Great of you to join us. We have a show coming up tomorrow with Poseidon. We just recorded that previously prior to this. Hence, I'm a little bit tired. Doing a two-hour show before stream is always a little bit more difficult. But we'll be back tomorrow with that. And then, of course, we have more shorter videos coming up. So check redice.tv, redicemembers.com. And, of course, we'll be back with Flashback Friday on Friday after that. Okay, guys, take care. I'm going to load up an outro here, and we'll see you guys soon. Have a good one.